We're starting today the Arachai in Parshas Vayishlach. I want to start with a very interesting, short, pithy Arachayim on page Kuf Ayin Beis, where the Arachayim quotes a vort, very interesting vort, from his grandfather. In Perek Lamed Beis, Pasuk Tesvav, the Pasuk describes the gift that Yaakov sent to Esav when Esav was approaching. Vayolin Shom Alaylahu. Yaakov slept there that night. Vaykafen Abav Yadol Minchol Esav Achiv. He took from the things that he had a gift to send to his brother Esav. Izim Mosayim Usiyashim Esrim. Right, 200 female goats and 20 male goats. Vechelim Mosayim Ve'elim Esrim. 200 female sheep and 20 rams. Gemalim Meinikos Uvneim Shaloshim. 20 nursing camels together with their children. Paros Arboim Ufarim Asara. 40 cows, 10 bulls. Asonos Esrim. 20 she donkeys. Vayorim Asara. And 10 male donkeys. Right? So, of course, the question is, you know, this is very nice and all of that, but, you know, why does the Chumash see fit to tell us, you know, mamish bifrat, all of the exact numbers of, you know, different kinds of this animal, different kinds of that animal that were sent to Esav? What's more, what's the significance of all these numbers? I mean, you know, it's really the same question. You know, it's a very unusual selection of numbers, very lopsided. You know, it's not an even number of animals or anything of that nature. Why these particular numbers, and why bother to tell us? So Rashi quotes from Bereishis Rabba, who's also a Gemara, that this pasuk is actually teaching us a halacha lemaisa, the notion of ona, and it's how frequently does a husband have to be intimate with his wife. And you know, basically, Rashi has an arichas over here, you know, to tell you that, you know, when you compare the number of males to the number of females, you know, in each of the animals listed off in the pasuk, you get a sense of proportion of how frequently each male is supposed to be with the females. And learning out from that proportion, you can figure out, if you do the math, you know, the different degrees to which husbands are supposed to be with their wives, you know, depending on the kind of occupation they have in the life. Again, it's an arichas and Rashi, you can take a look. The Arachayim quotes from his grandfather a totally different mahalach in the pasuk, and one which, again, is very just sharp and beautiful. If you like gematrias, you'll like this. Izim Mosayim, it's towards the bottom of page Kufayim Beis. Shomayti Mimari Zekeni Zeichasari Vikonach Lebracha. Shneskavin Yaakov B'cheshbon Sheshalach Vibali Chayim K'cheshbon Seir She'olobo Takaf. Right? Yaakov Avinu was trying to work out a gematria over here. He wanted to work out the gematria of Seir, again, the Seir being another name for Esav. And Seir in gematria is also the gematria of Takaf, you know, Tokef, which means strength. So here's the Cheshbon, says the Archaim's grandfather. Was that Shalach the Cheshbon, Izim Urechelim, Tof Mem? Right? You get 440 between the goats and the sheep, right? The pasuk says, "Izim Osayim Usiyoshim Esrim." Right? In terms of the goats, both male and female, there were 220. Vechelim Osayim Ve'elim Esrim. When it comes to the sheep, male and female, there were 220. So that's 440 altogether. Ukmalim Shloshim Im Bneiem Heim Shishim. Right? There were 30 nursing camels. So if you consider that each camel is nursing a child, so 30 plus the 30 children comes out to be 60. Hare Tov Kuf. So that comes out to be 500 exactly. Right? Paros Uparim Chamishim. Right? When you add up the bulls and the cows, it comes out to another 50. Right? Because there were 40 cows, 10 bulls. Asanos Vayorim Shloshim. Right? And when you add up the number of donkeys, which were 20 and 10, you get 30. So altogether, that's 580. Hare Takaf. So that comes out to be the gematria. 580 comes out to be the gematria of Takaf, or Tokef, right? Strength. L'shaver Tokpo. The point of this entire mincha was to break down the Tokef of Seir, to break down the strength of Esav, the mincha added up to be 580, right? So that's keneged the tokef and keneged the seyer. So the mincha itself, all these numbers are deliberately chosen in order to fight against Esav. And as Yaakov Avinu not only was a master of gematria, but he knew how to use gematria to his advantage. He could pick a fight with the gematrias and win, you know, based on the gematrias that he was putting out. A very fascinating pshat from the Aruch Chaim quoting from his grandfather. Okay. I wanted to take a look, just going a little bit further through the parsha, on page Kuf Ayin Zayin in the Aruch Chaim, Perek Lamedal of Pasuk Chafei. One of the issues which the Aruch Chaim himself is going to indicate was discussed by the Rishonim, you know, long before the Aruch Chaim, is the propriety of the destruction of Shechem by Shimon and Levi. Right? Again, we know the story. Dina is raped, and Shimon and Levi basically, in retribution, you know, for the rape of their sister, go and they destroy, they wipe out the entire city of Shechem. Already the Rishonim asked the Kasha, you know, so Meila, Shechem and Chamor, you know, so they were the ones who, you know, perpetrated the atrocity. But all of these innocent, quote-unquote innocent people in Shechem, what did they do to be decimated, to be destroyed in such a way? And so that's the Aruch Chaim discusses at length this question, again, towards the right, top of the right-hand column, on page Kuf Ayin Zayin, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Chafei, Vayargu kol zachor yes chamor v'gomer, kosha, lama yargu mishelo chata. Why should the Shimon and Levi have the right, the ability to kill those people, those innocent members of the town of Shechem who didn't sin? What's more, it's very striking, if you look at the Psukim, it seems like they go after the regular townspeople even before they get to Chamor and Shechem. Right, if you look at Perek Lamed Aleph, again, Pasuk Chafei, on the third day after the Bris Milah of the inhabitants of Shechem, they were all, you know, very much in pain from the Bris Milah. They attacked the city. They killed all the males. And Chamor and his son Shechem, they killed by the sword. So one way to read the pasuk, maybe the simple way to read the pasuk, is that among the inhabitants, they killed Shechem and Chamor, but the Aruch Chaim doesn't read it that way. The Aruch Chaim says, if you read the pasuk very literally, it sounds like they killed all the males and they left Shechem and Chamor for last. That seems strange. Shechem and Chamor were the ones responsible in a direct sense for the atrocity. How come they were left for last to be killed? So he proposes a number of different... Thank you. He proposes a number of different explanations. Achein. Right, the first answer that he proposes as follows. The truth is, Shimon and Levi came down to Shechem with one intent in mind. They wanted to kill Shechem and Chamor. As far as they were concerned, the rest of the town could go free. They had no bone to pick with anybody else in the town. But what happened? But, you know, the rest of the town, you know, unfortunately for them, they were very loyal to their leaders, right? So when Shimon and Levi came down and it was clear that they were looking for mischief, you know, so the rest of the city basically made a human wall in front of Shechem and Chamor. And at that point, Shimon and Levi killed off all of the male inhabitants, not because they deserved it fundamentally, but they were owed them. In other words, they were trying to kill Shimon and Levi in order to protect Shechem and Chamor. So Menela, in self-defense, at that point, Shimon and Levi killed off the male inhabitants. That's what it says, that they killed all of the males. So that's the order of the pasuk, says the Aruch Chaim. Why did they kill Chamor and Shechem last? Because, you know, they had to break through the human wall of all the other Shechemites, you know, all of the other inhabitants of Shechem, in order to finally get to Shechem and Chamor. So, you know, they first, Vayargu kol zachor, they killed off all of the males who stood in self-defense, and then, you know, they killed the leaders.
They were trained, they couldn't check with Shimon and Levi.
So I guess the Archaim is saying like this, look, they were in pain, you know, but your king's under attack, you pull yourself together, you do what you gotta do. I think that's how he's understanding. So by the way, let's just see the end of the pasuk, the end of the Archaim for a moment, then we'll just address one issue in the story. Basically, Shimon and Levi killed off, you know, Shem and Chamor, Taka deserved to die, right? And Shimon and Levi were totally justified killing them. If it would have been up to them, they would have rather spared the other inhabitants of Shem. But since, you know, they came into Shem and all of these loyal citizens, you know, rallied, you know, protected their king, and rallied against Shimon and Levi to try to kill them, Mimela, in self-defense at that point, they had to kill all of these people. So the question is, okay, it's a very interesting way of reading the story, so, but then how do you fit the Bris Mila into this whole story? Meaning, the way we simply read the story, right, the supposedly simple way of reading the story is Shimon and Levi come up with an ingenious way to weaken the inhabitants in order to kill them. Just let everybody get a Bris Mila. And then, when they're in pain, when they're defenseless, and, you know, they're basically sitting ducks, that's when Shimon and Levi come and they kill off all the inhabitants. That's how we normally understand the story, right? According to the Archaim is saying that Shimon and Levi would rather not have killed off the inhabitants. That was sort of on the spot. They ended off having to kill the inhabitants. Their plan was just to come in and to kill Shem and Chamor. So if that's the case, why... What were they planning with the Bris Mila?
Because they foresaw that they might stand up against them, so they wanted to weaken them.
Right, so I
think they would stand up against them, they would not be so capable.
Right, I think if anything, the according to this chapter in the Aruch Chaim, rather than seeing Shimon and Levi as being somewhat duplicitous, you know, in terms of, you know, basically getting these people to perform Bris Mila in order to then kill them, They're actually, in a sense, I mean, it didn't turn out this way, but in a sense, they had the chmonis of the members of the inhabitants of Shechem. In other words, the cheshbu l'chara went as follows. If they don't have a bris mila, so then when we come in to kill Shechem and Chamor, you know, these inhabitants are going to rise up against us, and A, we're going to have to kill them. B, maybe we won't be successful at killing them, and maybe they'll kill us, right? So Shimon and Levi decide, you know what? Let's weaken the inhabitants of Shechem so we can get in there and kill Shechem and Chamor. And Adarabba, you know, not only are we protecting ourselves, but ultimately we're protecting the inhabitants, because if they're in their weakened state and they can't really start off with us, so then we can just go in, you know, have a targeted mission for Shechem and Chamor and leave these poor people alone, right? Narvas, what they apparently didn't anticipate was how resilient the people of Shechem would be. You touch our king, you know, we're not going to let you in here. And despite the injuries that they had with their Bris Mila, they rose up and they were valiant opponents to the point where Shimon and Levi had to actually, you know, kill all of them before killing Shechem and Chamor. Yeah.
I heard the rabbi read the Archaim in terms of what would come up, But all battles have collateral damage.
Right. So it's interesting, the idea of collateral damage. The Maharal over here in the Sefer Gur Aryeh and Chumash, he develops the idea of collateral damage in the context of Shechem. Dahainu. Basically says the Maharal, the rape of Dina was an act of aggression, and as such, I mean, it's. Pearl Harbor Day is coming up, right? As such, it's an act of war, right? In other words, you know, the rape of Dina was a declaration of war, essentially. So in a war, you know, there are no innocent civilians. Basically, in response to the act of war, you know, that was declared by Shechem and Chamor, Shimon and Levi come, and they respond to the city of Shechem. And you're right, nobody else was, you know, in times of peace, the members of Shechem might not have been culpable, but this was a declaration of war. So, you know, the warring parties have the right to go after everybody, even civilians, if they feel that that's going to advance the war. This was Hiroshima. you know, in a certain sense, right? So the Arhaim doesn't develop that idea. We'll see. The Arhaim is going to speak in another vein in just a moment, but the Maharal, commenting on the story of Shimon Velevi, you know, definitely has that that understanding that this is a war and worse of collateral damage, and that's how to understand, you know, the whole story over here.
I said before that they would come and defend the king, Hashem as an honor. So that there would be a meaning of being righteous. So there would be a lot to kill them. Could they not imagine that, let's say, we wouldn't kill them now. Let's get that sick. They're not going to stand in our way. Let's say that would happen. But then they would say there's a way. They're going to get healed. And then maybe they'll run after us.
And then they'll come after us, right?
Right, so could that later on
be a time to kill them? Right, so I don't know if that would be, you know, the idea is, you know, let's say that you could leave them be now, but, you know, if you don't kill them now, they'll come back and attack Kabbal Yisrael later on, right? So, but I don't know if that would have been enough to kill them Din Rodef. In other words, L'chara, Din Rodef means the guy's mom is coming after me, right? In other words, to kill the guy, I'll snach that he'll be a Rodef later on. I don't know if that would be included in the Din of Radifa. So that's one shot. Right, says the Archon. Again, very, very interesting. You know, Shimon and Levi had no intention, really, of killing the rest of the inhabitants, except that they stood up, you know, to defend their king. Oh, Tam, Shahargu Kobnei Ho'ir, L'tzad Shehem Hoyu Be'ezer Shechem L'gzol Dina. Right, another reason, different way of looking at it. Maybe the members of the town of Shechem are really culpable fundamentally. In other words, not just, you know, that they were defending their king, but they were fundamentally guilty. Why? Because they helped Shechem steal away Dina, right? Uvnei Noach v'chuyav v'misa al hagesa. The other halacha is that a ben Noach is subject to the death penalty for stealing. Aval al ha'arayas en chiyav kidina lo'haisa eshesish. Parenthetically, in an ironic kind of sense, the rape of Dina fell into the category of gezel, not that of arayos, because again, she was not an eshesish, she was not married. And, you know, from the point of view of arayos, what was done did not fall into that category, but it was Gezel, since she was abducted and raped against her will. You know, it's a type of kidnapping, essentially, and, you know, this type of forced rape falls into the category of Gezel. The Timsa Sha'amar HaKosav Asher Timu HaKosav, proof for that idea that the Chiyuv was because of Gezel, not because of Arayas, is the manner in which the Pasuk expresses what atrocity was done. The atrocity is expressed as having been Asher Timu Achosam, that, you know, Dina was defiled by Chamor. Harikina Hamaisa Lekulam, right? You see that the atrocity was committed by everyone. Asher Timu Achosam, they, the inhabitants of Shechem, were the ones who defiled Dina. It wasn't just, you know, Chamor. It was, you know, the inhabitants as a whole. Halamarika Shiyan Kulam Shava Big Zayla. You see that everyone was involved. The Tam Shlo Amash are Gozlo Achosam, so why doesn't it say that they stole away or they kidnapped their sister? Shuikar Avon Shalop is Chayvul Misa, Lo Mash Yigzayla Shayna Bashava, Vinatka Mino Shim Lo Tam Asher Timu, Lo Hoya Osten Mishpat Gomu La Harel Kol Zocha, the Gam Shabinach Shigazal, Eno Nifta Mimisa De Heshavam, Im Kozel Ohayu Bnei Yaakov Hargim. Right, so he says as follows. Interesting he'or in terms of the dinim of Bnei Noach. There's Gezel and there's Gezel. Right, it's true that any type of Gezel for a Ben Noach is theoretically punishable by the death decree. However, you know, standard Gezel, you know, if they stole a piano or you know, something like that, you can always make restitution. Okay, you can pay it back. This type of Gezel is not something for which restitution can be made. They can't undo what was done. Even though, in theory, Ben Noach can be killed for any type of gezel, Shimon and Levi would have been mochel, the gezel of the city of Shechem, had it been simply theft in the conventional sense. Had they just stolen an object, which they could have then made restitution for, even though, in theory, they would have been subject to the death penalty, Shimon and Levi would have been mocha. You know, they would have said, okay, we'll let it go. Right, now that's interesting. We normally don't think of the laws of Bnei Noach as being such that the judges can say, okay, we'll be mocha. You know, we won't impose the death penalty, but the Aruch Chaim implies that the death penalty is a maximum, but it can be waived, you know, in theory. However, that he writes that explicitly. Right, so four lines from the bottom. Right? So even though in theory the Ben Noach would have been chayav Nisa for that as well, however, Bnei Yaakov were mochel, but since this was not just gezel, thievery in the conventional sense of the term, this was a rape, this was something that couldn't be undone. You know, they can't just push a button and make it better, or pay some money and make it better. That's what raised it to the level of an atrocity, and for that they weren't ready to be mochel. Umid dehava kama mehaumos ovrei das hamitzvos, the Bnei Yaakov didn't see themselves as the avengers for any violation of the Noach law that ever took place. They didn't start off with the other nations. But since this was something that affected them personally, and something for which you really couldn't make restitution, they decided to enforce the letter of the law, which is that a Ben Noach Shigaz al Chayiv Nisa. So again, the idea which I want to bring out, which is interesting in the Aruch Chaim, is the Aruch Chaim seems to be learning that, you know, although the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that any violation of the Shavu Mitzvah Bnei Noach brings with it the punishment of Nisa, you know, brings with it capital punishment, the Aruch Chaim seems to be saying that those who are administering the punishment to the Bnei Noach can choose to administer the punishment of death or choose not to. Right? In other words, it's kind of like it's a maximum punishment. Similar in American law, you know, where, you know, there are numerous punishments that are out there, so once the jury decides that so-and-so is chayiv, the judge then decides to either give the maximum penalty or the minimum penalty. Sounds like, you know, misa for Ben Noach, for Gezel, is the maximum penalty, but in this case, the Bnei Yaakov chose to forego enforcing that maximum penalty, because again, they were willing to let it go, you know, had it been something of lesser severity. Yeah, David.
It's a real hard to understand that maybe some of them were aware of the gezel a little bit, but they weren't all aware of it. As you said, they were all, he saw Dean and he took her, but now with the, it's a real hard to understand the gezel aspect. I mean, there are other personal things that said that, of course, they weren't dying.
Right, the Rambam, he's going to get to that in a minute. Yeah. Right, so I think what the Aruch Chaim means is as follows. Again, the question is, in what sense were they all complicit in the Gezel? Right? So, remember, the Gezel over here really means two things. It means the rape, but it also means the kidnapping of Dina, the keeping her against her will. Now, the rape only happens with Chamor, right? That's a one-on-one encounter. But then what happens? I mean, follow the storyline. Chamor takes they take Dina back to the town of Shechem, and she's imprisoned there, essentially, right? In other words, when Shimon and Levi come and they, you know, attack the city, they free Dina, right? That's what the pasuk says. B'nei Yaakov b'lo achalolim, right? And they take everything. Vayichu es Dina b'beis Shechem vayitzeu. Right? And, they take Dina from the house of Shechem and they leave. In other words, she's been kept there, presumably against her will. Right? I mean, you know, you don't get the impression that Dina was anxious to, you know, to marry into the family. This whole thing was against her will. She was being held as a prisoner this entire time. And the entire city is aware of this, because the entire city has been told by the leaders that, you know, guess what? You know, we're going to have this wonderful shidduch over here, and it's going to work out, and we're going to, you know, be mechutanim with Yaakov and his sons, and it's all going to be wonderful and great. And basically, the entire city consents to this plan. Nobody stands up and says, wait, how can we kidnap this girl, you know, against her will? Right? So I think that's what the Aruch Chaim is learning. They're all complicit in her gezel. They may not all be complicit in her rape, but in keeping her against her will, that they very much are, you know, complicit, you know.
Like Rashi does.
I'm sorry?
Not like Rashi. Rashi says, remember.
Yeah, and which Rashi?
Or Medrash. It says that she did not want to leave. So she was promised to marry her.
Right. So I don't think Rashi, does Rashi bring that Medrash? I don't think Rashi brings that Medrash. But
it would be against,
so it doesn't bother the Archaim, but I think the Archaim is assuming that she was being held there against her will, you know, in which case, you know, they're all complicit.
Maybe there was a shame on Pasha, even though they didn't do the actual kidnapping.
Right.
They just didn't complain.
They didn't
say that that would be where
they did more than not just complaining. It wasn't just like a lo samar al dam reyecha. They go along with a whole plan, including circumcising themselves, which is based on the premise that we're going to keep this girl here against her will. So and that's a little bit more than just, okay, they didn't call 911. You know, it's they're a little more complicit, you know, than just not reacting. Yeah.
A few moments ago, the rabbi discussed the punishments for B'nai Noach in terms of this particular crime. So I would like to better understand that Yaakov Avinu, in the last three sukkah of Lamed Aleph, he expresses his own fears with the names, but he leaves unanswered the question that both Shimon and Levi ask him.
Right.
It's always bothered me.
Okay, so one of the things we're going to see in a few moments is the Ar Chaim's commentary to those psukim at the end of the parak, the exchange between Yaakov and his sons. What exactly was the debate, you know, that they were having at that point?
The other conspirators in a conspiracy, when the FBI comes in with another, conspirators are found equally guilty, let's say, to the head of the...
Right.
So these are conspirators. They're no less guilty than the main malefactors.
I mean, if I'm not mistaken, you'll correct me if I am mistaken, in the famous Rosenberg trial, I think Ethel Rosenberg was just found guilty of being complicit, if I recall. In other words, Julius Rosenberg was, again, they were right, they were wrong, I mean, whatever the issue was, though I think even at the time, you know, the one who was actually supposed to be involved in espionage was Julius, and Ethel was just convicted and executed on the basis of the fact that she knew and she didn't do anything about it. That she was basically complicit. I think, you know, so there you see the ultimate. I mean, somebody being, you know, executed, electrocuted, you know, based on being complicit, essentially. Right?
There's an Arab Shabbos.
Yeah, over to them. Yes. So, let's just see a little bit further. Ol tam omer asher timu, nasa tam zel l'kichas mamona. Right? Another reason that it says asher timu achosam as opposed to asher gozlu achosam, you know, that they defiled their sister as opposed to that they kidnapped their sister, that justifies the fact, this is meant to justify the fact that Shimon and Levi took the spoils from the town of Shechem. You know, which is very bothersome. In other words, you know, as much as the Rishonim, you know, spend some time trying to figure out what justified the killing of all the inhabitants of Shechem, okay, so you say it was a moral act to kill all the inhabitants of Shechem, they deserved it. Yeah, but then it seems to taint the morality of Shimon and Levi that after they kill all these people at Shechem, they make off with all the spoils. Right? In other words, if you're telling me that they're righteous avengers, you know, and they're just trying to stick up for what's right. Oh, and by the way, we're going to cart off all of their money. You know, what gives them the right to do that exactly? So the Archaim says, "Asher tam, asher bozul esarib adol lechsem, asher timu, so asher timu as dima achosam pirush demei haboshes." Right? When Shimon and Levi took the money from the inhabitants of Shechem, they were taking the payment which was deserved to the family because of the embarrassment, the shame that was inflicted upon Dina. Because as we know, the Gemara Bava Kama tells us that, you know, that bush, that may boshes, when you pay, you know, somebody for the embarrassment that was caused, you figure out the amount of embarrassment, how much money you have to pay for embarrassment. Well, it depends on the one causing the embarrassment. It depends on the stature of the person who's being embarrassed. Right? In other words, if a great person is embarrassing, you know, in a very profound way, a person who himself is considered to be distinguished, so the demei haboshes, you know, the amount of money that you have to pay for that could be exorbitant. Ki hema drogos muflogos ulavai shi aspik kol chelom l'demei boshes bas Yaakov ham yuchad ba'olam Berum hamaylos mechamor anivze ad ma'od. Right? And in this particular case, right, chamor was on such a low level for him, you know, for the degraded chamor to inflict the atrocity upon Dina, the daughter of Yaakov, with all of her mindless that he did, halavai, that all the money in the city would be enough to make up for that boshas. That's interesting. This is not quite halachic, because of course halachically, the greater the mevayesh, the greater the boshas. Here, the Arachayim is saying, the bedavka, because Chamor was a lowly person, that led to a greater degree of boshas. That seems to be against the halach. Yes, I think that's right. Right, right. I think that's for sure true. Meaning, depends what the act is, right? You know, if Chamor would have, you know, insulted Dina, she said, "Okay, Chamor, what do you care?" You know, so, but Chamor sleeps with Dina. You know, he rapes Dina. You know, so it's bad enough that a person is raped with clout, but you're raped by such a lowlife. You know, it adds to the, you know, to the degradation that Dina is experiencing. So again, says the Arachayim, you know, there isn't money in the world that could really make up for the Boshe. So when Shimon and Levi took the money from the city, you know, they were taking what was due to them. In other words, this was the payment that was due to Dina and to the family for the Boshe, for the embarrassment which was inflicted upon Dina through this act. Chamor is the son. Shem is the son. I'm sorry. Okay. Wait for so many times. Yeah.
Okay. So the other thing is, I don't mean to sound disrespectful, but I mean to Dina, but didn't she bring this all on herself? What business did she have to go into the city in the first place? So she went to see his nice daughter. The Yaakov's daughter, she doesn't belong over there. Yaakov made it toward his daughter, toward his family, to stay away from Mason, stay away from the Goyim.
Right. So Rashi Taka quotes something like that at the beginning of the paragraph. Tei se Dina bas Leah, right? Yet Leah son is Aisa, Dina son is Aisa. But you know, as much as that's true, but blame the victim, you know, is not always the answer. Reading, you know, if look, I mean, to put it in other terms, a guy wanders into a dangerous neighborhood, right? And Nachman Litzlan, he's attacked or killed or something like that. You know, we don't find any provision in halacha that says, look, what were you doing there in the first place? You know, I mean, it's your fault. You know, you know you're not supposed to go into a neighborhood like that after 8:30 in the evening, right? You know, so yeah, Chazal criticized Dina for going there in the first place, but that doesn't detract, you know, from the crime itself. A crime is a crime. You know, they were still held liable for what happened.
This may help this itself, but what gave Shimon and Levi the right to judge were they the dunyan of the of all the shvatim? Did they ask Yaakov for shuls to do this? Where does this come from? Some guy doesn't go out and say, okay, I'm going to read the buy that to you, and I'm going to take some new land.
Right. So the dinner may be different with Bnei Noach than they are in a Bezdin, right? I mean, clearly there was no judicial procedure that happened over here. But we do have a concept by Bnei Noach that you can have a Dayan Yechidik, that you can have a single judge, right? And essentially, Shimon and Levi were acting in that capacity. In other words, these people as Bnei Noach are Chayiv Misa, so we have judged that, you know, this is the case. They essentially admitted to the act. I mean, they have to, again, if you say that if you learn like the Arachayim, that the Isser was the Gezel of Dina, so they have Dina in custody. I mean, there's no question that they are an ongoing violation of this particular, Din of Dina Bnei Noach. Okay, so, you know, that apparently, you know, that they hold is enough, you know, to be able to go and enforce the law in this case.
What does it mean? Is taking Shmuel to play a part? She was kidnapped, so.
That's opinion. Shmuel would just mean that they have an obligation to get her back. Right, but the notion that they would have the right to kill all the inhabitants and take the money, you know, that's as some kind of compensation, you know, as some kind of punishment for the crime. But in Shulim, you know, if they could just get her out of there, you know, drop a helicopter, you know, have her jump up into the helicopter and take her out, that would be the end of the story, right? But you know, it seems like it's more than Pidyon Shulim. It seems like there's some element of retribution which is going on over here.
How much time elapsed from the Maaseh of Esau
to myself of this Adina Shem.
I think a year and a half, right? Because Yaakov is in Sukkos, right, in the interim. Right, so Chazal say that he was in Sukkos for a year and a half. Right, so it's approximately about a year and a half, sounds like.
So was it ladies for coffee?
Ladies 13. Chazal tell us lady was 13.
Ladies 13.
Yeah.
Just 13 now.
Right, and one of the sources for Bar Mitzvah is actually over here, because if you make a cheshbon, Levi was 13, according to Chazal over here. So it says, Vayichu Shimon v'Levi Ish Charba. Right, so Levi is already called an Ish. You know, so you see that 13 is called an Ish. So if you make the Cheshbon in terms of that, you know, Levi... One second. So if this is 2.5 years after they got back... I don't know, I can't make the cheshbon off the top of my head. But again, Chazal said that Levi was 13.
For 5 years,
and he married Rachel. Before maybe
the 3rd year of their marriage, after the 6 years.
Right.
After another 6 years.
So 1 second. So 7 years.
Before, let's say, after Jacob came to Muslim.
Right, second
time. 9 years.
Right.
Ten years,
let's say. Right, so 10 years in.
10 years.
And right, and then
22 years.
Then 22 years, right? So
12 years.
It's another 12 years, right? So it's right. So it's about maybe it's between a year and a half and 2.5 years after he meets up with Esav, basically, right? Something along that line. Between a year and a half and 2.5 years after he meets up with Esav.
Most of the sons were 13. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right, exactly. Flavi was 13.
I mean, the old one, 9, 10, 8, 7, 8, 9, 5, 6, 7, 8, 12. It's very close to Anoshim. They came through the field. They came back there. That Dina was raped.
Right, interesting.
Right.
So maybe what the Torah Taka means is as follows. You know, the only ones who really got upset about that were the Anoshim, the Hainu, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven didn't do anything. Shimon and Levi, the ones who reacted. You know, under Levi, they were really Katanim at that point. You know, they really didn't have the wherewithal to get all that excited about it. Right? So the Anoshim is Davka, you know, the ones who were B'nai Hachi, you know, to be called Anoshim. Maybe that's Pshat and Pasuk. Right. Okay. The Galil Fisher Kosati Lamal Shahoda Bemaisa, Zeno Yoil Leftor Meakath. There was Hodah, there was admission that the Maisa had taken place, but that would only work to exempt from a Knas, from a penalty. Abu Boshas, the Shah Dvarim Chayuv, right? But, you know, being Moda, acknowledging the fact that a sin was committed doesn't exempt one from having to pay the Nei Boshas and Upash. The Rambam Yaakov referenced before, in Hilchos Melachim says that the reason that Shimon and Levi killed the inhabitants of Shem was because they were in violation of the din of dinim. Right? One of the Shem Mitzvahs B'nai Noach is dinim, which the Rambam interprets to mean that they have an obligation to set up courts. And here, since they didn't set up a court to be dan Shem for the Gezel, so Mimela, you know, they all became Chayiv Misa as a result of that. Because Mi Omar LeHarav SheChayav LaDun HaAlam Alei HaMelech LeChayav Seba. Says the Arachaim, I don't understand the Rambam. Because, you know, it's one thing to say that the B'nai Noach have an obligation to set up courts. It's another thing to hold the B'nai Noach accountable for not having judged their own king. I mean, their own prince, their own king. You're not dealing with a democracy over here. You know, we'll just impeach the president and everything will be fine. I mean, come on, let's be realistic over here. They didn't have the wherewithal to judge their leader. How can you hold them responsible for not having set up a judge to judge their leader? Even according to Jewish law, where you would expect a greater degree of responsibility, you know, people are not obligated to judge their leader. As it says, well, don and blow me even also. When it comes to the melech, a melech is not judged, right? And he can't be borne witness against. Rather, you have to say you know, as he's been saying, that it wasn't just that they failed to bedun him, but somehow the people were really complicit in what happened. Not just that they didn't judge him, they helped him, they gave him aitzus in terms of how to deal with the whole situation. I mean, Mela, you know, they were complicit in a real sense, the way the Archaim was suggesting. In other words, the Archaim is saying, I agree to some extent with the Rambam, that the people here are being executed because of a failure to adhere to the mitzvahs Bnei Noach, but you can't say that it's dinim, because that's too much of an that's too high of an expectation of the people. It must be gezel that they were somehow complicit in the act of the kidnapping.
Isn't their fault that they didn't have a judicial system to begin with?
So do we know that that's true? I mean, in other words,
otherwise this might have occurred.
No, so it's one thing to say that, you know, they didn't have a judicial system which would be able to handle their you know, their king committing something of this nature. I mean, it's another thing to say that they didn't have a judicial system altogether. I mean, again, it wasn't the United States of America, right? No, it's
accessory before the fact. They're guilty.
Uh-huh. You're out to get them. All right. Yeah.
Let's call space today. Who ever kept this name until today? Today, now there's a community in Tennessee, Spirit, Tennessee, there are thousands of them. But who ever kept up? You know, people that are so, such a high interest for a ship of this great honor, they want to kill everybody in all the countries.
Right. I think the Archaim addressed that question, meaning, you know, so they should have killed everybody. Nobody kept Shevin Mrs. Bring up. So I think the Archaim addresses that. He says, look, in theory they could. What? The Gemara says, Rav Ayatir Goyim, in other words, you know, the Ribbono Shel Olam saw that the nations of the world were not keeping the Shiva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. The Gemara... Yeah, but the Gemara implies it was pretty early on. I mean, certainly during the time of the Chumash. I mean, I guess the Gemara beginning of Avodah Zarah, Rav Ayatir Goyim. I'm sorry? Right, but let's
read. Right.
That could be, okay. But the truth is, I mean, in any case, whether most people were keeping Shema Mitzvahs B'nai Noach or not, clearly there were people besides the B'nai Shem who were not keeping the Shema Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. I think that which we could agree upon. But the Archaim is saying, okay, but again, Shimon and Levi didn't see themselves as the, you know, as the jury and the judge for the entire world. They didn't feel this need as, you know, to go out and, you know, adjudicate, you know, police the entire world. But Narvas, but here it struck home. So here, where it struck home, it was personal, and they realized that the Bnei Shechem were Chayiv Misa Min Hadin, so they decided to act on that judicial right that they had. In other words, they had a judicial right to slaughter anyone who was not keeping the Shema Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But again, not every judicial right do you necessarily act upon. Here, because of the personal, you know, element over here, the fact that they were affected by it personally, they chose to act on the, you know, on the that right which they had from the judicial perspective. Right? So he doesn't like the Rambam, the Arachai. He says, you know, he doesn't really understand how dinim is applicable over him. The Rambam doch hadivrei Rambam, but there is bimsus dinim shestav rei noach kina kavod lahoshiv vayonim el ladun mishpatim ben ish lo el yulin sham devorah. The Rambam says he also, the Rambam here on Parshas Vayishlach, he also disagrees with the Rambam. He says, you know, dinim doesn't mean that you have to set up a court system. Dinim just means that you have to figure out, you know, a way of adjudicating you know, minor petty disputes between people, but you know, to have to deal, to hold them accountable because they didn't deal with the rape of Bina, you know, that's expecting too much. Right? The Ramban says that, you know, so okay, so then if they weren't in violation of Dinim, why did Shimon and Levi kill the inhabitants of Shem? So he says because they were all the Avodah Zarah. So of course that just, you know, again, it's hard to accept, says the Arachayim, because, yeah, I mean, look, everybody was over Avodah Zarah. So again, according to that logic, let Shimon and Levi kill everybody, right? Words, why the city of Shechem? And that's what he says, with Dvarav Zal Srichim Arev, says the Arachayim, you know, you're going to have to bring more of a proof to back up that idea. to the, he says to the Rambam, Ubeis ha'ma'oros, lo nosnu tam l'mukichos mamonam v'honam, either way you slice it, even according to the Rambam, or according to the Ramban, you know, neither of them gives the reason for the taking of the money. You know, the fact that they took the spoils from the city of Shechem. So again, the Arachayim is basically saying, look, you know, the Rambam and the Ramban deal with this, but I think the Mahalach that I have, that they're all held culpable as being complicit in the kidnapping of Dina, and that the spoils which are being taken are Dmei Boshes, that seems to fit the story the best, says the Arachayim, above and beyond what the Rambam and the Ramban are suggesting. Now, at the end of the story, you have the famous exchange between Yaakov and Shimon and Levi. We are in Pasuk Lamed. Vayomer Yaakov o Shimon ve o Levi, achartem osi. Yaakov says to Shimon and to Levi, you've made me, you've made it difficult for me to concentrate. You have discomposed me, the article says. Rashi says that achartem is meloshen mayim achurim, muddy waters. You know, in other words, you've disturbed me greatly. I don't have the serenity, the peace of mind that I would have had beforehand. You've made me smell bad among the, I'm sorry, odious. Making me odious, yes, among the inhabitants of the land. Vanim say mispar, fairish article, right? Vanim say mispar, they're all going to come up against me and I'm going to be attacked, I'm going to be destroyed, right? Which, by the way, you know, and Mefarshim should bring this as a proof, Yaakov Avinu doesn't have a fundamental problem with what Shimon and Levi did. He doesn't call them to task on moral or ethical grounds. How could you wipe out the members of the entire city? He doesn't have a problem with that. His concern is pragmatic. Whoa, they're gonna, you know, you did this, they're going to come looking for revenge. Right? So, you know, Yaakov Avinu in a backhanded fashion is actually justifying what Shimon and Levi did from a moral and ethical perspective. I have no time to tell you that what you did is fundamentally wrong, but sometimes, even if you do something which is right, it's not necessarily smart. You know, he's saying to them, this might have been right, but it wasn't smart, because now they're going to come and attack us. They say back by Yomru, Hachazona Yasas Achusenu? Should he treat our sister like a prostitute? What's the back and forth over here? Right? What was the machlokas, so to speak, between the two? Yeah. But he lets them have it, but again, by the brachas, is he letting them have it for, you know, fundamental purposes, or that they were rash? Right, but in other words, ba'akar hargu ish, you know, that wasn't a smart thing to do. They're rash, they're impetuous, you know, but he's not saying that they're murderers. Right? You don't have to read it necessarily that he's condemning them on moral grounds. You know, this was not a prudent thing to do. Yeah.
I'd like to better understand Yaakov's fear of the neighbors. He dealt successfully with Laban. He dealt successfully with Esau. How could he in any way really care he's disturbed? No. Mm-hmm. On the contrary, this sends a message who Yisrael, who the name Yisrael are, And don't fool around.
Okay, so let's take a look at the Arachayim, Kufayim Ches.
What they say that the back and forth was that Yaakov is saying you endanger our lives, and when he's saying Hazona Yasas Achusena, that it's appropriate to risk our lives in this situation in order to take revenge and because of Dina's name.
Oh, okay, so yeah, we'll see that in just a second. How's it different than Pinchas and what he did? See, Pinchas was trying to stop a literal magefa, a physical magefa. He's also trying to stop a spiritual magefa. I mean, in Klal Yisrael, we're doing this terrible sin, and he was pulling Klal Yisrael back from sin. Shimon and Levi weren't doing this because they felt this need to pull the nations of the world back from sin. This wasn't a Kiruv mission, you know, that they were going out on, right? In other words, it definitely was, there was an element of revenge. I mean, it was revenge which they were justified in doing. I mean, sometimes revenge is justified, but, you know, so there, Yaakov says, look, you didn't have to do this, you were entitled to do it. So if you're entitled to do something, just because you're entitled to do something doesn't mean it's smart to do it. Right? By Pinchas, not only was he entitled to kill them, but the impression he had from the Chumash was that it was meritorious to kill them, because by doing so, he was bringing Klal Yisrael back from the brink, both in terms of stopping the Magefa, and also getting the people to kind of wake up and see, whoa, that was really a dumb thing that we were doing over there, a terrible thing that we were doing by being Mizana with the Benos Moav. Right? So that was a positive action, not just, you could have done that, but why would you want to do such a thing? Vayomer Achazonas, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, towards the bottom right of Kohayim Ches. Tzarek Lodas, Matshuva Zo Oso Lemechush Yaakov Al-Hashmodasu Ahu Avesa. What was the answer to Yaakov? Yaakov says, I'm afraid that we're all going to be in trouble over here. They say, but should our sister be like a prostitute? Okay, very good. It's nice to see that you're upset. But still, the pragmatic question remains. But we're going to be destroyed, you know? So, like, what's your answer? Halo Afilu L'chatchilam Shalu Vayomer Agoyim Achaz Mehakas v'yichadua nosin el solohem v'lo yehargu kulon aleha afilo barayas mikol shekein b'derach zeh shekvar hoya mashahoya. He quotes a Yerushalmi, famous Yerushalmi, which unfortunately became very relevant during the Holocaust. Right? Shalmi says a group of non-Jews surround a group of Jews, right? A group of, you know, during a pogrom or something like that, and they say, we want to rape one of your women, right? So Yerushalmi says, the following halacha prevails. If they say, we want to rape one of your women, arbitrarily take one of the 20 women who are holed up in here and hand her over to us, otherwise we will kill all of you. So the halacha is, they're not allowed to hand anybody over. They're all going to be killed, you know, so, you know, you figure, sacrifice one to save the klal. All right, but, you know, we don't have the right to play God and to pick which one is going to be handed over. But in contrast, if the Goyim come and surround the Jews, and they say, we want this one, hand this one over for death or for rape, right? Otherwise we'll kill all of you. So then says the Yerushalmi, look, once they did the picking, and now it's a question of, hand this one over, and she'll be raped, or he will die, or whatever it happens to be, or don't hand them over, and he, she, and everybody else are going to die. So once they're miyached somebody, once they point to somebody specific, so then you hand that person over in order to save the clouds, because otherwise everyone's going to die anyway. That's what Yerushalmi says. Right? Again, unfortunately, this was halacha l'maisa, oftentimes during the Holocaust.
What about with Yosef's brother?
With Yosef's brother. Right, although there again, they weren't killing anybody, right? But I guess they didn't know.
They wanted you to go to jail.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. They weren't killing anybody in that particular case. Right? So says the Arachayim, you know, so that Yerushalmi basically says, if it's a question between we're all going to die, or one specific woman is going to be raped, right? So Yerushalmi says, look, the right answer is, you know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the one in this particular situation. So says the Arachayim, so certainly the time of Yaakov Avinu viewed against that backdrop is really just that Yerushalmi and Shkolim. I mean, basically he's saying, in Trumas rather, says Yaakov Avinu, look, what's done is done. She was raped. It's even more than Yerushalmi. She was raped. It's not a question of, should we hand her over to be raped? We could even hand her over to be raped, you know, if it would save the entire Jewish people. So certainly once she's been raped, why should we take revenge where it's going to raise the possibility that the entire Jewish people is going to be decimated? So what's their answer? So he says, v'ulai, perhaps, she'chavnu lomar ki lo yachush al hadover, ki lo yarishu elo im hoyu hargim belo siba, aval hariga zo l'siba re'uya hoysa, she'loka hachuseinu ba'al korecho v'yaso zonah. So who omen hachizor yasas achusenu? Mira kavala shechayil v'alazus, alaznus, sherei pnu yohoysu, v'noach yom suva elu aleshus chaviru zohar, uvehimu chayu v'ov, v'achosu me'imu. Says the Arachayim, The answer that Yaakov's sons give to Yaakov is as follows. You're worried about the Goyim attacking us in retribution? Even the Goyim appreciate when we take revenge for a just purpose. Right? This was justified. They're not going to start up with us. Why? Because had we just gone into Shechem and murdered them for no particular reason, you're right, they would see us as a threat. But they get it. They understand that we're doing this because this was the right thing to do, and they'll respect us for it. Right? When we go in and we bomb the nuclear reactor, right, you know, with all that, everyone beats their breast and says, oh, it's so terrible, so terrible, so terrible. How could the Israelis do such a thing? You know, behind closed doors, they're all saying, of course we understand how the Israelis can do such a thing. You know, I mean, what are they, crazy? Well, of course they did such a thing, right? So, Mimela, when the rest of the world really, Bamas, understands why we did it, they're not going to give us a problem. If it would have been arbitrary, so then, yeah, okay, so then they would have started off with us. But it's not arbitrary. We had a reason. Right? So that's their answer. It's not just an emotional reaction. They're responding to Yaakov Avinu's fear. You're afraid that the Goyim around us are going to gang up on us and destroy us. They're not going to do that. They're reasonable people. If they would have been in the situation, they would have done the same thing. Right? So they understand. You know, they know where we're coming from. And they know that we're not a threat to them. They would only attack us if they saw us as a threat, as these people who are arbitrarily destroying cities. We're not. We did it for a moral and ethical reason. Yeah, yeah.
It seems to be the other way. I mean, if the were afraid that the Shemites would go ahead and defend, means that they held that what Shem did was a good thing. So maybe that climate of society at that time, who says maybe the rest of the nation would have been the same way. It would have been vague. They'd stick up to the Shemites. Maybe the climate in that time was so promiscuous.
Right.
Who said that they were opposite? Maybe who said that they would defend the Shemites?
Right, but I think it's different. In other words, the Shechemites stood up against Shimon Velevi because they were defending their own king. You know, your own king can do no evil. Plus the fact that, again, they, according to the Arachai, they were much complicit. In other words, they were all the enemy. Right? But somebody else looking from the outside, who had a more objective perspective, would say, look, I get what Shimon and Levi did. You know, it's not hard to understand. So, you know, we're not going to start up with them. And Be'emes, that's what happens. Be'emes, that's what happens. In other words, in the end of the day, the Klal Yisrael are not attacked by the others. But Yichitas
Elokim.
Right, right, right. So, Shaila is what that means. But Yichitas Elokim, maybe the Archaim is learning that, you know, they're afraid, not because they're afraid of starting up with Klal Yisrael, but, you know, they appreciate that what was done was done morally and correctly.
Does the pay teach us anything? Because it's another idiot. In other words, it's not another parent. But
Yaakov doesn't respond.
Right. So the pay just means that the matter is
closed.
Right. It's overdone. Thank
you. I'm just reading the Pasuk in French over here. When Yaakov hears about the tumult that came to Adina, who comes out to speak with Yaakov? It's Chavurah. He comes to speak with Yaakov. But Shem was the original perpetrator. Shem had come out and said, look, be Michael because I did it. But he stood in the background. He didn't even have the right book. He didn't have the right book. Who's going to come out and speak with Yaakov and say, forgive me? He had to send his father, his children.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one of the things is that you're going to have company for something.
Right. I mean, he wasn't the ideal son-in-law, you know, at many, many levels. Yeah. Rahan gives another pshat, and again, the truth is this, both pshat and both what he said before and what he's about to say now, which is very contemporary when you consider modern state of Israel in particular, and a lot of the issues of this nature, which unfortunately are recurring. Oh, Yirtzeh Lahashiv, maybe the children of Yaakov meant to say as follows to him, Ki Adrabba, Yistachnu Bein Ha'umos Kishiyur Shabazi Echot Shalat Avas Yaakov, Upal Va'asach Kechepsa Ritzono, Lotia Lissoneim Tekuma Bein Ha'amim, The other Abba, Bozet Yechitosom Al Ha'am V'Yeradu Mifneiyam. What's the best way to gain respect from the nations of the world? So that's the Machlokas Yaakov and Shimon and Levi. Yaakov says, oh my gosh, you went in there, you stuck up for yourself, you killed them. Oh my gosh, they're going to come after us, they're going to kill us. Shimon and Levi say, no, fakert. You know, if we were to roll over and play dead, so they're going to say, oh, these guys are a bunch of wimps. Look at what happened over there. They take this sister, they rape this sister, and they just kind of throw their hands up. Okay, let's move in on them. We'll destroy them. These guys are, you know, pushovers. You know, we can steamroll over them. That they say, Hachazona Yasis Achoseinu. They're going to do this, and we're going to sit silently? That's going to really put us in danger. Because the nations of the world are going to look at us and say, these guys are a bunch of wimps. We'll move in there, we'll destroy them. Right? So in other words, their answer to Yaakov Avinu is not just moral outrage, but it's pragmatic as well, from a pragmatic point of view. We want to show that we don't take things lying down, otherwise they will walk all over us. Right? And again, unfortunately, to some extent, these machloksim are going on to the present day. You know, when you want to deal with your enemies, is it best to be Mr. Nice Guy or Mr. Tough Guy? What's the best way to impress upon them that, you know, what's the best way to get them to leave you alone? Basically, we just want to be left alone, right? Is the best way to be left alone to be nice to them or to be tough to them? That's the machlokas, you know, between Yaakov and his children.
You keep referring to clothes, so like you already in Asia. It was only three guys,
there
were only
like
five.
It was a Muslim.
Right.
What's
the example?
Right.
That
Klal Yisrael.
It's a nation of Israel.
It's quality, not quantity.
Or maybe it's
but I mean, even in the context, I mean, Rabbi Rubin is correct. They're referred to as Yisrael. You know, it's a nation.
But things are we find that Yaakov, his shtick was called a dog, it was Chaiser, he agreed to his sons, according to the Dorachim saying, they're against that.
Right. On the other hand, you have by the brachos at the end of Bereshis that he seems to still criticize them, you know, for what they did. Right. So, I mean, even though he doesn't answer back on the spot, it doesn't seem like they totally convinced him, you know, because he still mentions that at the end of his life. But at least they have what to say. In other words, that they had enough of an answer that he said, okay, I hear your point. You know, even though he still let them have it, you know, at the end of his life. Okay. All right, so we'll pick up Ezra Hashem next week, and we'll see you then.